Ralph Nader has launched three major presidential campaigns and founded over 100 civic organizations that have affected auto safety, tax reform, atomic power regulation, occupational safety, the tobacco industry, clean air and water, food and drug safety, access to health care, civil rights, open government, citizen access to justice, and much more. His latest project is a conference at the Roe Center in Roe, Massachusetts, entitled Ralph Nader, Trump, Empire, the Military Budget, the Draining of America, and What You Can Do About It. Takes place May 18th through May 20th, and it is a great pleasure to welcome Ralph Nader back to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. A great pleasure as always.
You're very welcome, Joe.
Always good to have you on our program. So really three big things here that we're talking about, but let us begin with the military budget and what got you focused on this topic.
Well, the military budget is no longer criticized in Congress. It used to be some Democrats like Senator Proxmire would take it on for waste, fraud, abuse, redundancy in weapons systems, contracting outlaws and matters like that. Now, in the last few years, both the Republicans and Democrats are going along with a huge expansion of this bloated military budget. It's been criticized by more than a few retired admirals and generals over the years, not to mention the Government Accountability Office of the U.S. Congress. And another $84 billion was added to this budget by Trump Republicans, with a lot of Democrats supporting it. I mean, just think of that. It's now over $700 billion with a B. It's over half of the entire federal government's operating expenditure. By that, I mean all the other departments, Department of Agriculture, Interior, the Department of State, all the other departments combined are less than the military budget. Now, this does not include insurance programs like Medicare or Medicaid. These are operating budgets. And that's one reason why I think this Roe Center conference is so important, because when you have a bloated military budget that isn't even auditable, I mean, you know, what small business, what big business would not audit its own budget? And the federal government requires auditing for a lot of the companies that do business with the U.S. But since 1992, the Pentagon budget has violated federal law, because it's just about the only department that does not provide what the Government Accountability Office says is auditable data. And that's why, Joe, you get these news reports that the Pentagon lost $9 billion in the first year in the war in Iraq, the criminal war of aggression. $9 billion they couldn't account for. Or the Air Force bought billions of dollars of spare parts because they couldn't locate existing spare parts inventory in warehouses around the world. And if you don't take on the military budget, you don't show America why there's, quote, no money, end quote, for rebuilding and renovating schools, public buildings, sewage, water, drinking water systems, roads, bridges, public transit. So I think this session at the Roe Center, and people can go to Roe Center, it's ROWECENTER.org for more details, is so important, because we can show the people who attend how they can go back home and organize town meetings with their senators and representatives. They demand the town meetings of their senators and representatives to talk about this issue.
So this idea of empire, how did we get to where we are?
Well, first, we built up a huge military machine to counter the Soviet Union and its desire to spread communism. And that became something so out of control that President Eisenhower, in his farewell address in 1961, basically cautioned the American people about what he called the military-industrial complex threat to our liberties and the proper allocation of public budgets. For example, for domestic necessities, like I just pointed out. When the Soviet Union failed in the 1990 period, the question basically was, what do we do with all this military hardware and all this military budget and all these contracts in the pipeline with General Dynamics for nuclear Trident subs or bombers by Lockheed Martin. How do you feed that machine? Well, you feed the machine by becoming a global policeman. You know, you prop up dictators that you think are going to destabilize the world, and they brutalize their own people and create enemies to the U.S., and you think you have to have force projection in the Pacific, off the coast of East Asia, and on, because they've got to feed that huge corporate appetite of the military-industrial complex. And now we're seeing the bitter fruits. Our adversaries are increasing in number. They're spreading into more countries, and we're trying to chase them. And the more we drone them and the more we blow them up, the more adherence they get when these families lose their members, etc. And now they are increasing their skill in the use of ground-based weapons. They're becoming more daring. You can see what's happening in Western Europe. And the question is, how long are the American people, never mind just the taxpayers, going to stand for this while our public works, our public facilities and services are crumbling for lack of repair? Think of all the jobs that could be produced that couldn't be exported to China with this kind of project. But not as long as the military budget, as an arm of empire, devours our country. All empires devour our country. And that's what we're going to discuss at the Rose Center in terms of how to build a left-right coalition. And I'll tell you, Congressman Rand Paul, and that's the son of Ron Paul, but Ron Paul, when he was a congressman, teamed up with Massachusetts Congressman liberal Barney Frank to do something about de-bloating the military budget. So we have a left-right coalition potential to strengthen the course for the United States of America and have it pay attention to the necessities of the American people.
Once again, the name of the conference is Trump Empire, the Military Budget, the Draining of America, and what you can do about it. So let me ask you about Donald Trump, the role that the current president of the United States plays in this equation.
Well, he basically wants to give more and more money to the military budget. As a builder in the U.S., which is what he was, to be sure, you know, casinos and luxury condominium towers, but he knows building, and he knows that you have to repair things. And he keeps saying, we want to have an infrastructure program, but somehow he pushed Congress to give $84 billion more dollars for the bloated military budget, and he didn't use any muscle with the recalcitrant Republicans to expand public works repair in every community, city, town, rural area in the country. And so he is basically the tribune of empire. He believes in the total domination militarily of the world by the USA, and that's never going to happen, and we're going to be losing ground in our country unless we straighten out Washington.
You've obviously been an observer for many decades of what has happened in Washington and what has happened in our country. Did you see the Trump phenomenon coming?
Not at all. I thought he was a wild speaking, failed gambling casino magnate who was able to get a lot of press because his words were so outrageous, racist, misogynist, you name it. But I never thought he would clean up all the Republican candidates opposing him, including Jeb Bush and, you know, all the others, the way he did. And I must say, this does not portend well for the future if the American voters in large numbers do not do their homework. You cannot vote and demand better candidates, and not just two-party candidates. You can't do that unless you do your homework about the record of these candidates, not just their BS or their rhetoric. If you don't have an informed voter, they become very vulnerable to slogans, to rant, to cheap political advertisements, to provoking emotions instead of intellect.
One of the big parts of this conference that you're having at the Rose Center is what you can do about it. And as you say, this is going to be productive. And so give us a sense of what can be done and the actions necessary to turn many of the things around that we have discussed over the last several moments.
First, you start with knowledge about the waste, fraud, and abuse of the Pentagon budget. And that is going to be brought to their attention. A lot of it is online. Reports by the government accounting office of the U.S. government. It's called the Government Accountability Office now, the arm of Congress, the auditing arm of the executive branch. Some of it are Pentagon audits themselves on the waste of the military contractors, the criminal violations, and so on. And a lot of it comes from good newspaper and radio reports and TV reports. So first, they come away with the knowledge. Second, they realize that the main branch of government that can turn it around is obviously the Congress, which is composed only of 535 human beings, Joe, who put their shoes on like we do every night and every morning, rather. And they want votes. I know they want money for their campaigns, but more than money, they want your votes. And so you go back to the district and you develop a summons, and we'll have the summons to the senators and representatives to come back to town meetings created by the citizenry and more left-right coalitions, where they have 3 hours and you hash out the whole military budget, how it can be cut, how we can certainly defend ourselves with a lot less. A wasteful budget is not a safe budget in the military terms. And how much of that money can be redirected right back home where people are to improve their public facilities, such as better schools, cleaner drinking water systems, and we know the drill. And once those personal contacts occur, it only takes about 300 to 400 people on a petition clearly written with their signatures to bring to the town meeting a congressperson, and maybe 600 people to bring a senator. Joe, that's how few people show up at town meetings. So you show that number, and the member of Congress says, wow, I can't ignore this. These people are going to have the media. They're going to have radio. They're going to have TV. We better show up. And then the citizens send them back to Congress with their instructions. And I am assuming quite clearly that at least 70% of the American people, and even more if they're informed, want to straighten out that military budget and agree with President Eisenhower.
So what do you think explains then that there are a couple of follow-up questions, but let's begin with, why is it then that so many House members, so many Senate, but mostly people in the House, are refusing to have town meetings? They're refusing to meet with their constituents or the second part of this, or they're just retiring. They're saying enough is enough. I'm not going to do this anymore.
Well, you know, they can stand the heat from the lobbyists to put money into their campaign coffers, but they really can't stand the heat from the people. And once the people really exercise their sovereign authority, the Constitution begins with we the people, not we the Congress or we the corporation. They can't stand the heat, especially when they're offered such high-paying jobs as lobbyists in Washington by the various trade associations and corporations. It's an easy life. They can make $500,000 to $1 million a year and enjoy themselves with long vacations. So that's healthy to replace the Congress. It's good if they quit of their own volition. The other reason is that the military-industrial complex knows how to lobby Congress. They take these huge military contracts. Let's say they're building a Trident submarine, and General Dynamics gets the main contract. It builds it down in Groton in Connecticut. And then it subcontracts all the pieces, a lot of the pieces out all over the country. And so the General Dynamics lobbyists in Washington will go to each member of Congress and say, hey, you know, there's 80 jobs here. There's 200 jobs there. But no matter what they say, they can't compare with the jobs of rebuilding the public works or infrastructure of America. That's where the real millions of jobs are, that are good-paying jobs. And as I mentioned, they can't be exported to some communist or fascist dictatorship overseas who knows how to keep their workers in their place at 70 cents an hour.
We are seeing, because of these retirements, we're seeing a record number of women who have decided to run for office. We're seeing a record number of citizens in their town say, okay, I'm going to run for public office, which I think you would agree is very encouraging. My question to you, though, is how do we then, as we the people, train them to do what you are talking about?
It's very encouraging, Joe, because Congress badly needs fresh energies and new people. The old leaders have let the country down from both parties, and it's time for a new generation. How do you inform them? You inform them by meeting with them. You inform them by showing up, half of democracy showing up. People don't show up for meetings with their representatives, state and federal. What do you think the representatives are going to do? Who shows up? Who shows up are the companies that wine and dine them and put money in their campaign coffers. What's important for people to realize is their own power, so they don't make excuses for themselves and say, oh, you know, whatever we do, it doesn't make any difference. The big boys will always win. Well, what I say to people is someone knocked on your door and introduced yourself as a neighbor. So, you know, knock on the door. Hi, I'm your new neighbor. Just want to let you know I spend 24% of your income. I can send your kids off to war. I can let companies pollute your air and contaminate your water. I can raise your taxes. And I can allow your roads and bridges to crumble while we build ever more weapons of mass destruction like nuclear bombs that can never be used. See you later. Well, what are you going to say when that person starts walking down the sidewalk? Are you going to say, hey, what are you getting me standing up here at the door? I was just watching the fifth rerun of Friends. You're going to say, you're an important person. Come back here. You mean a lot to me, so I better mean a lot to you as a citizen. And so people have got to show up at these meetings. And we have a community bookstore in Winston, Connecticut, and we have events for candidates who are running for governor of the state of Connecticut. And in that little town, people are more informed. They come, they ask questions, they listen to the candidate. That can be done in every small, middle-sized town and parts of large cities all over the country. But people have to stand up for their rights, so they stand up for the future of their families and the future of the country and the world. It's not that difficult. People do a lot more difficult things in their life, Joe. They have to raise children. That's more difficult. They have to deal with accidents. That's more difficult. They have to pay bills with two low-paying jobs and $600 a month daycare. That's more difficult.
But you know better than anybody, having been at the head of three presidential campaigns, that while that is all good, people do not come out and vote. So how do you get them to come out and vote? How do you get them engaged? How do you get them engaged not only in two parties, but even three or four parties? How do you do that?
Well, one is you start in July, August, September. You don't just telephone them a week before election. You got to get them registered, get them meeting each other, either in the housing projects or in the neighborhoods, and tell them, look, if you vote for X instead of Y, you're going to get a better minimum wage. You're going to get an adjusted for inflation minimum wage so you can put more food on the table for your family when you work for Walmart or Burger King. That's one way. So you don't do it just before the election. You do it in a neighborhood exchange process. And there are a lot of volunteers who are willing to do that. And there are a lot of influential leaders in the neighborhoods who other people look up to. So that can be done. But my major recommendation is there's only one duty in our Constitution, and that's jury duty. We have a Bill of Rights. We need the duty to vote. And I think everybody should be subjected to a requirement of voting only if they can go down to the polls and write in their own name, write in anyone's name, vote for binding none of the above, or vote for the candidates whose names they choose. So they have every conceivable opportunity to say yes and to say no confidence. And once that occurs, as it exists in Australia, the turnout in Australia in federal elections is 97%. You don't have to have millions of dollars begging people on TV to vote. It's the rule of law. I was once, you know, in a cab in Sydney, Australia, Joe, and I just wanted to make small talk. So I said, How do you feel living in a country where they make you vote? And he turned around and he gave me a disgusted look, and he says, why, mate, it's just a civic duty.
So do you think, are you optimistic that we can have that attitude in this country? A country that just 2 years ago collectively came together and said, okay, we want to drain the swamp.
It's easier than we think. One of my recent little paperbacks is called Breaking Through Power. It's easier than we think, and I give plenty of examples, both history and in the last 30, 40 years, where people got cleaner air, safer water, better nutritious food, where they got more response from the politicians because a handful of people representing majority opinion decided to roll up their sleeves and mobilize in the congressional districts. So I really think that it never takes more than 1% or less of people who make watchdogging the state legislature, say in Albany or in Washington, their civic hobby. That means 300 to 500 hours a year people spend that on their hobby, stamp collecting, even more bird watching. And if they do that and they're pushing forward knowledgeably the changes that a majority of the American people in public opinion polls support, they will win almost all the time. I just interviewed Gail McLaughlin, who for 8 years was mayor of Richmond, California, a very low-income city near San Francisco, a very run-down, high crime rates, low wages, a big Chevron refinery. They started a group called Richmond Progressive Alliance, Joe. It never had more than 300 determined, engaged people. They turned around the whole city. They elected a majority of the city council. They got a higher minimum wage. They got cleaner air from the refinery. They made the Chevron giant cough up more tax dollars, millions more for the city. They reduced crime. Just 30 people determined with public opinion behind them. So take heart, people.
Ralph Nader will be at the Rose Center May 18th through May 20th for a conference entitled Trump, Empire, the Military Budget, the Draining of America, and What You Can Do About It.
A great weekend in a beautiful area, right, Joe? And
absolutely.
You'll enjoy it and come home energized.
It's rosecenter.org for more information, R-O-W-E, rosecenter.org to find out more information. Ralph Nader will be there May 18th through May 20th. Mr. Nader, it's always a great pleasure to speak with you. I thank you very much for sharing and for the great work you do.
Joe, I can't thank you enough. You're a tribune of democracy and public dialogue.
Thank you very much, sir. I appreciate it. Thank you. Again, Ralph Nader at the Rose Center, May 18th through the 20th, rosecenter.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.